Okay, fine. So I'm going to start with the shiur is about Amalek. Okay, and it's Pasha Zachor, so, you know, it was good. Originally, I was going to do this at, like, they asked me to speak Shalshos B'Shalach, you know? So that was good, but then I got pushed off, then I figured it got pushed off to, like, this week. I figured it's Pasha Zachor, but then there's no Shalshos this week. So I figured I'll turn it into a shiur, you know? What are you going to do? You do something with it.
There's no
Shalshos
this week?
There's no Shalshos this week, no. Okay, fine. So, look, we're going to start with in B'Shalach, where Amalek comes and he tax Klal Yisrael, right? Do we just get out of the Midbar? We just crossed the Yam Suf. Everybody, the entire world is really scared of us, and Amalek has the gall to attack us, okay? So Moshe Rabbeinu, right, appoints Yeshua to wage war against Amalek, and Yeshua does that. Okay, the last few psukim, we're going to start with there. You know Moshe Rabbeinu, his hands are up, that whole story, right? And they, okay, good. So the puzzle like this is this puzzle Yud Gimel, Yud Zayin Yud Gimel. Okay, so Yeshua weakened Amalek and the nation with Amalek, people who attached themselves to Amalek, by the sword. So he weakened them. Okay, so this is the key Rashi here that we're going to try to explain. Rashi says like this, Vayachalosh Yehoshua, Chasach Rashi Giborov, he cut off the heads of the mighty ones, Volohisha El Chalashim, and he only left over the weak ones. He did not kill all of them. He just weakened them all. Like, he didn't kill them all. Right? Chopped off the heads of the strong ones, and the weak ones he left alone. From here we learn that Yeshua acted according to the word of the Shechina. Okay? You have a question already? Good.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, I have a question. My question is, like, I'm saying, the whole thing was, we're commanded to destroy Amalek, whatever, why didn't we just get rid of them from the start, more Amalek, nothing?
Yeah, that's the question. What is going on? Well, that's already, it's already an answer and a question. So that's what question, what does Rashi mean, you learn from here that he also p'yidibar shoshchina? Because why else would he do this? Why would it say, v'yachalosh? Why would he just weaken them? Why would he just kill them all? Okay, but it begs the question of why did the Shechina tell him to leave, not kill them all? Okay, especially where, the next pasuk, Vayomer Hashem Amoshek Sov Zos Yikaram Basayver Simbaz Neoshua Kimachu Emchaz Zeich Amal Mitachaz Hashemayim. Right, he's going to wipe them out forever. Right, and we're going to get to in a second the Haftorah Pasha Sachar with Shmuel and Shaul. Right? We'll read that in a second, but. We'll do that right now. Haftor of Zachor. Where is that? I'm hoping it's after Shmos. Yeah, here we go. Haftor of Pashas Achodim. So when... okay, so this is just the history of the thing. So this is the first time you meet a Malik is really over here. Okay, you know, really Amalek you don't hear from all Sefer Shoftim, like 400 years. I don't think you really hear from them at all. And then Shaul is appointed king, and then God tells him to go wipe out Amalek, right? It says, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvakos, Bakadti Eis Asher Asah Amalek LeYisrael Asher Sam Lo Baderach Ba'alasun Mitzrayim. I'm going to take revenge. Don't have mercy on him. Another time maybe we'll take up, Okay, kill them, right? Adults, children,
babies,
innocent little babies.
Animals,
okay, everything. Totally wipe them out, exterminate every single remnant of Amalek, destroy them. Okay, and that's through the mitzvah. Timcha Zecher Amalek.
I guess they only have their molecules left.
Yeah, not even that. Not even that. Okay. So, and you see, and Shaul doesn't do that, right? That's Shaul's big chait. He leaves over the king, which eventually Shmuel takes care of, right? He cuts him into four pieces, according to Rashi. According to the Medrash, he cuts him up into olive-sized pieces and feeds him to ostriches. Oh, you know the
nice.
Medrash?
Nice.
Yeah. Okay, good. No mercy. Okay, so the question is, so what the heck, what is Yeshua doing? And because Shaul doesn't do this, because Shaul does not kill them all, that's... God says, "Vahidvar Hashem al Shmuel lemor." So God says to Shmuel, right, the Navi, about Shaul the king, "He's nichamti kimlichi Shaul melech ki Shaul me'acharai v'sdvar Elohikim." Right. So God says he regrets that he even appointed Shmuel as Shaul as the king over Klal Yisrael because he didn't carry out this commandment to totally wipe out Amalek. Okay, and because this Shaul loses his kingdom forever. Right, and this is the beginning of the end for him. This is when David, the Melucha transfers to David after this parsha, the next parak. So the question really is here, why would the Shechina, right, you see like how the whole Torah is set up here, the whole mitzvah is set up to totally wipe out Amalek. Why would the Shechina tell Yoshua to just leave over the weak ones? It's like a crazy thing. It's totally against the whole idea the Torah seems to be setting up of wiping out Amalek.
What was the scenario in the story?
Of Shaul?
Or that Yeshua was told to leave some over?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just in the Parsha in Bishalach. When Amalek comes and attacks Bnei Israel, Moshe appoints Yeshua to be the general to fight them. So even though we won the war, right? We won the war because Moshe's hands and we were Mispala, we won the war. But still, he could have killed them all, but he did not kill them all. He left over the weak ones. He only killed the strong ones.
Because of a commandment? Or?
Because of a commandment. That's what Rashi says.
Was this his like, first time like, in war?
Yeshua, yeah. This is the first time Klal Yisrael ever was in a war. Right? That we were never in a war. We didn't even know how to fight war. That's why the Ramban explains like why you need this whole thing with tefillahs and Moshe going up there. It's because Klal Yisrael never really... We didn't know we're a bunch of slaves. We never fought in wars. We didn't find a military. And Amalek was like a trained force. They come and attack us. We don't know what we're doing. It was a very precarious situation. It's very dangerous. You have a bunch of slaves. You don't know how to fight a war. And all of a sudden you have a trained army coming up against them. It's a very dangerous situation. And Yeshua basically led us. And we had the Ashkacha, obviously. But we could have killed them all. But we didn't. Yeshua left them over.
Was the commandment given at this point in time to destroy Amalek?
No. The very next pasuk is the commandment.
Huh.
And it really it's in Sefer, I think, Devarim. But I mean, the next pasuk is Devarim, is Kiseitze, I think,
yeah.
Right?
Right at the end
of the parsha of Kiseitze, right. What was your question?
Are they identified as a mulligan in this incident?
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This is the whole thing is based upon the whole hatred of Amalek.
It's
based on this thing where they attacked us. They attacked us. And in fact, the pasuk over there says, what do they do? It says, Zochei Shachasal Chal Amalek B'derech Utzeis Mitzrayim Asher Karcha B'derech Vayizanei B'cha Kol Nechashalim Acharecha. What Amalek did is they killed our weak ones. He killed out the weak ones from us. That was like what he did. He picked off the weak ones, the stragglers. You know, he dafk attacked our weak ones, and we the opposite. We leave the weak ones around. Why don't we kill the weak ones? Why did Yoshua?
What's the parak
in Bishalach or
Bishalach?
It's the very end of Bishalach. Yud Zayin Yud Gimel. You check it out. The Rashi is there. I did not make it up.
Yeah,
I know. Sometimes I do, and nobody
knows.
Sometimes,
out.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes it's usually a good raya.
So. Is this story like really define who Amalek is?
Yeah. Yes. This is really basically the the beginning. You get the essence of Amalek from this whole parsha here. Okay.
I heard like a good thing one time. Somebody said like they were really brazen in the fact that like they were the first ones to attack Israel after they apparently they heard about what happened in Mitzrayim,
right.
And they were still willing to do it.
Yeah, right, exactly. They were still willing to do it. And it wasn't there, they had nothing to gain. We weren't going into their land. They had nothing to be afraid of. We weren't attacking them. We didn't fight them. We beat Mitzrayim. We were going into the Canaan and the Plishtim. We weren't even going through their land. They go out of their way to attack us as soon as we cross the Yom Suf, and the rest of the world is frightened. If you look at Az Yashir and the Mogu Kol Yoshvei Canaan, everybody's terrified. Everybody's too scared to attack us. And Amalek is like the first nation that comes and they attack us. And it's true they lost, but like they kind of took away a certain amount of like the fear of like Klal Yisrael on the rest of the world that we could be attacked.
I thought there was a mashal about the boiling pot.
Yeah, they jump into the boiling pot, right? You have a boiling pot, everybody's too afraid to jump into it. But the first moron goes and jumps in there, so he gets burnt, right? But he cools it down because, right, thermodynamics, right? He's going to cool it down because he... Thermodynamics. You know, you got a little physics. So he cools down the pot. So that's what them is. They cooled it down. Everybody was so scared, but when some Malik attacked us, it showed like we were a normal nation. You could fight war.
Well, were they
hotheads? Hotheads, we have big hotheads. They're sick. They're sick. They're sick guys. They really calculate.
It should
well, oh, but not that pot was really hot.
They weren't too cold. They weren't too cold.
Rashi says thermodynamics balance.
Yeah, it's balance. Okay, good.
But it's funny. So that's actually interesting. Because at first I was about to say like I always thought, you know, Amalek always identified as anti-Semitic, hating, you know, Jews.
Oh yeah, they hate Jews. They hate
like
Jews.
An ideology, you're saying.
Or just yeah, like well, no, not that. That's not the whole ideology. They hate us for you know, basically just because they can't stand for these principles, you know.
Right.
But then I'm gonna say, but how much could they have known about us? But then I guess this was the shot around ever around the world move about the Mitzrayim.
They knew about Mitzrayim, yeah, and they also, yeah, presumably they understood. And also, you gotta realize the whole Nisi Mitzrayim took place over the course of a year, you know.
The
whole Makos, every Mako was like about, was a 1 week and 3 weeks in between. You have 10 Makos, that's 12 months. So like people knew about it. Everybody knew about it. People knew what was going on. Egypt, that was the center of the world, and people knew crazy stuff was going down in Egypt, you know? And they knew. And they went out of their way to attack us for, just because of their hatred for God and for Klal Yisrael. It's insane. It was like a suicide mission, really.
Wait, why do they hate us so much?
Why do they hate us so much? That's a good question. Why do we hate them so much?
Because they hate us.
Oh, yeah. They started. Yeah. They started.
Yeah, they started. Oh, that sounds such a little kid. It sounds just like a little kid.
Yeah, so why?
What caused
Why do they hate us so much?
Yeah, what caused them to hate us that they needed to attack us?
Do we know why they hate us so much?
For just, I mean, I guess it's not really.
It's not normal anti-Semitism, though. There's you know, the whole world is anti-Semitic to a certain extent. But, like, these guys, they're a different type of anti-Semites. If you really want to study Amalek, the easiest way is to study Nazis. That's, you'll see. That's a certain kind of a hatred for Jews that's, like, it's a different type of hatred. You know, it's not based, you have to, like, go into the psychology. Why do they not, why do Haman, you know, hate Haman, Hagagi, right? Haman was a descendant of.
Agag.
The Agags, the kings. Agag was the king. Yeah, he was. Agag was like names the kings of the Malik. Paro is like Mitzrayim. Agags were the Agags. So he was descendant of the Agag line, right? So why do they want to hate? Why do they want to kill the Jews? They just hate Jews. They just hate Jews so much, you know. It's a pathological. It's different than regular anti-Semitism. It's not the same kind of a thing.
You're not in the Malik if you don't hate a Jew.
Right. That's part of part of their creed is to kill the Jews. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if there's really a place for this question in this sheer form, but
no, positive. Yeah, go ahead.
But I mean, like, if we say this is like an incident that was like heard all around the world, like I've only ever seen it ever recorded, you know, anywhere.
Think about how far back.
Oh, why do they? I mean, what incentive would they have to like deny it?
I mean, they're like crazy things are going on in Egypt. Like you would. Right,
okay,
right
the
now.
Records. We'll deal with this.
But yet, the Jews are the only ones.
Aaron, how far back do written records exist in a normal society?
They had written records then, man.
No.
Another time. Yeah. There's another discussion. Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay, so to try to answer this.
Also, I heard another thing one time, just as one line about that. Like, okay. I've heard. There's like a line that people say, like, history is written by the victors.
So therefore, we wrote the history.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Oh, you mean?
But it's not any of the book.
Well, what does that mean? It's not.
Well, book. It's not any. You don't find anywhere except for the Bible.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he's trying to say. History is written by the victors.
Yeah, it's not written.
I think that means something else, though. I think it means like the victors put their spin on it.
Oh,
right.
To get the story.
That's really
history.
That's what it's.
Yeah, don't
to
quote
mean,
that. It's not going to help us.
Oh yeah, that's
yeah,
not.
It's not going to help us.
Oh, I didn't realize.
I like it though. It's a good application.
Like when they say cream, then they probably don't really cream them. Like it's
a different time. Yeah, a different time for that question. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. Okay, so now the next to try to answer this question. Okay,
Charles.
Of why would the Shekhinah tell Yehoshua to leave them alive? Mm-hmm. Okay, just kill them. Kill them at that. He had the opportunity then, and Dafki says, "Don't kill them." Why not? It's crazy. Right? Okay. So now, Chafam Abbas. Okay? It's Tanya, Rabbi Yossi Omer. Okay, Shalosh Mitzvos Netzdava Yisrael B'Knisasim Aretz. Okay, the three mitzvos that Klal Yisrael was commanded when they entered Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Rambam quotes this. It's the first Rambam in Hilchos Malachim. Malachoseham, right? It's the first. It's the halacha, these three mitzvos. Lahamid lahamelech, to appoint for them, to appoint a king. Lahachar zaro shel amalek, to wipe out the offspring of amalek. V'livnas lahem beis habechira, and to build the beis hamikdash. Okay, three mitzvos. V'eini yodei zemen tchila, and I don't know which one you do first. Okay, so it's before the Gemara derives that Rashi says like this: Shalosh mitzvos. So the question is obviously there's more than one, three mitzvos when you enter Eretz Yisrael, like Trumos and Maestros, right? I mean, there's a lot of mitzvos that are Tali Baretz. So why is it these three mitzvos? So Rashi says, Lahachi nakat shalosh alalu, shein tlu yozu bezu, lasos kesidram, kidmefarsh lakaman. So the reason it took these three mitzvos is because these three mitzvos of establishing a king, wiping out a malek, and building the base of Mikdash, they're all taloi zebezet. You have to do them according to the proper order. Halachically, right? Okay. Rebetchila melech, v'acharei amalek, v'acharei base of Bechira. Right? First the melech, then amalek, and then the base of Mikdash. Okay, the Gemara is going to derive that. So the Gemara says, first, yeah, I don't know. So you have these three mitzvos, and I don't know what's the proper order. So how do you derive the order? So it says like this. Kishu Omer ki yad al kes ka mechamol Hashem be'amalek. Right, so that's the very last pasuk. Right, well, Rashi interprets a little differently in the Chumash. We'll do the Gemara first. Right, it says ki yad al kes ka mechamachem be'amalek midor dor. Right, so have Omer lahamel hamelch tchila. So I say, therefore, means first you appoint a king before you wipe out a malek. Why? So it says yad al kes ka. It means there is a hand. There's like a ruler, a throne, somebody sitting on God's kisei, right? And that means, and you see, and Shlomo is sitting on God's throne, which means like the king of Klal Yisrael is like, so to speak, sitting on the kisei Hashem, right? So yad al kes ka means there's a melech on Klal Yisrael, right? So you see by Shlomo. So therefore, is kiyado kes ka. First, you have a melech, somebody, a ruler, sitting on the throne, and afterwards, milchem l'shem b'malek. Then you have a war against the malek. Okay. V'adayin en yodei im lifnos l'hem beisa bechir tchila o l'hachar zar shel malek tchila. So, but still, which do you do first? So you need to do melech before you do malek. Now, which comes first, mikdash or malek? So kishu omer v'hiniach v'haniach l'chem mikol eveichem. First you wipe out all the Amalek, because they have to be God, you know, that you have no longer enemies surrounding you, attacking you, and only after that do you really wipe out, do you build the base of Mikdash, right? Then the Makom HaShayivchar, first take care of all your enemies, after all your enemies are subdued, then you build the base of Mikdash. So first Melech, then Amalek, then all the enemies really, but Amalek included, and then the Beis HaBechira. V'chein hu omer, by David, v'ayhi ki yishiv ha-melech David b'beiso, v'ashem heniach lo misaviv, v'chsev, v'yomer ha-melech el nasa navi, re'eh anochi yoshiv beis ha-razim v'chulu, and that's why David came with the idea, he's going to build the Beis HaMikdash. Right, David really should have built the Beis HaMikdash. God says, no, you're an ish damim, and your son's going to have, Shlomo's going to have to build it, right? But David really was going to build it. He actually purchased the land to build it. Okay. So it's first, only after David conquered all his enemies did he do that. So what is this, why are these mitzvos contingent one upon the other? Okay. You go ahead. Do you have an idea or no?
I didn't think so.
Okay, go ahead.
Maybe because in order for us to do the other things, first, you need to establish some sort of like a nation and a ruler.
Okay.
And in order for us, once we have a ruler, we have things established, like an army and everything. Then you can move on to destroying Amalek. I don't, depends on the order,
more to that.
So okay, so why do you have a king first and then you wipe out a Malik? Why is that?
Because you need someone to rule people over in order to, you know, start create an army and destroy a party or people or another army.
Okay, I mean practically, like you need a ruler.
Practically, you need someone like in armies there are generals and stuff, or stuff like that. I'm just saying, like in general, like they're not really you're a nation, but like you need someone to rule them and show them that that's like the get them going.
To lead it, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Which is true.
The guy, first person who runs into the battlefield, and
who, the king?
Yeah, I think there's a Jewish thing. He rides in front of the army.
The Jewish king rides in front of the army, right? Not like Paro or something, right?
Right. Not like others where they stand in the back and they're just watching.
Uh huh. Is that really true that all Jewish kings do that? That'd be remarkable.
I don't think all Jewish kings do that. I think the halacha is that he's supposed to.
He's supposed to.
Like, I don't know if he has to stay in the front lines, but when they're making the initial charge, he has to charge in front. But I'm sure he can just stop and let others go.
That sounds dangerous. Yes, it's suggested. Suggested, please. I'm going to go chill with those guys over there. I'll be guiding you guys.
It's also like once you have a ruler, you establish yourself as like a nation. Like, you know, like that. So that when you have yourself as a nation, has things in order, you can do other things as a group.
I mean, the establishment of kings gives you like an idea, unifies the nation.
Exactly.
I'm saying the people need something to follow. Like, if the king's not going to fight his own war, why should they? That's kind of like some sort of philosophy is why the king should ride in front.
Okay, now why can't you just like wipe out a Malik? Why can't each individual guy just go to some Malik and, you know, kill him or something?
No one's gonna do that by themselves.
Nobody's gonna do it by themselves.
So you can't say, "Oh, let's go kill a Malik."
But I think it's in the right direction. A Rambam. Okay, Rambam. It's about the Ramadan, the Perek Dal, and Hilchos Malachim Mechamos. Okay, it's like this: "B'chol Yumayisav L'Shem Shemayim." All the king's actions should be L'Shem Shemayim. V'yitiyeh Machshavos Megamasa L'Harim Das Emes. His kavana should be to raise the true religion. Ulamalas Olam Tzedek, and to fill the world with justice. V'lishbor Zror Harishayim Ulelachem Mechamos Hashem. Right, to destroy the power, the might of Rishayim, and to fight the wars of God. You appoint the king for two reasons. One is mishpat, like it's just justice in the society. There's a mishpat of the melech, and also to fight the mechamos Hashem. Okay, and
Yeshua was considered a king.
Yeshua was a king. Okay. Moshe was a king. Yeshua was a king. And we have a king. All save for Shoftim, we didn't have kings. We just had Shoftim. Okay. So I want to say this is the first step, is that the reason why you need a king is because it's a milchama against the Malik. It's a war. It's a milchamas Hashem against the Malik. Right? It's kiyat kes kal, milchama la Hashem ba Malik. Okay, and you only have an idea of milchama, a war, if you have a king. That unify creates the military, the commander-in-chief. And it creates the din of milchama. That's why you point to king, milchama and mishpat. Right? We'll focus on the milchama part. And it's milchama l'Hashem b'amalik. The mitzvah is not just to kill an amalik, but to go to war. It's a milchama against the amalik. Okay, and therefore you have to first appoint a king who's sitting on the kisei ka, who's sitting on the God's throne, so to speak. When the melech Yisrael reflects the malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a certain extent, and when the melech Yisrael leads Klal Yisrael in the war, it's a milchama l'Hashem b'amalik. As opposed to each individual guy goes and kills an Amalek, that's not a war. That's not a Mechemes Hashem. That's just killing an Amalek. Okay? There is, you know, the famous Rav quotes it about, we'll not get into it. Okay. But there's an idea of Mechama here. The mitzvah takes a form. This form of the mitzvah, there's certainly one aspect of the mitzvah that demands Mechama, and therefore, to Mechama, you need to have a king. Okay? It's Mechama l'Hashem b'Amalek. Now the question is like this. What's the idea that the wiping out of Malik, the Binyan HaBayis, the building of the Mikdash, is contingent on wiping out of Malik? Okay? So that's hopefully what I'm going to try to explain over the rest of this year. But, and that's, I think, the key idea, ultimately, is that a prerequisite for building the Beis HaMikdash is the destruction of Amalek. Okay? And you see really the all the times that we find Amalek right afterwards, the major wars of the Amalek was followed, like this one over here in Bishalach, it's right after the Jews got out of Mitzrayim, right before Matan Torah, a little bit over, right, and they built the Mishkan about a year later, right? They got to build the Mishkan a year later, after by Har Sinai, a year afterwards, a little over a year after they fight the first war against Amalek. Then you don't really hear from Amalek for hundreds of years, and then we appoint Shmuel, you know, God appoints, you know, Shmuel to appoint Shaul as the first king, and right away go wipe out Amalek, right? And, you know, Shaul ruled for two years, David takes over, and the Binyan HaBayis, right, follows, David doesn't do it, ends up being Shlomo. But basically, right after that battle against Amalek in Sefer Shmuel is when the first Bayis was built. Okay, you don't really hear from Amalek again. Questions, there's a few maybe left over, right? In Chizkiyahu, there was like a couple, 500 people who tried to kill the remainder of them. No major wars, but basically you don't really hear from them again until really you have Megillah, right? And Haman HaGagi, right? Haman is a descendant of Amalek, and he tries to wipe out Klal Yisrael, right? And that's the whole story of the Megillah. We're victorious, we kill all of Haman and his hanchos and his 10 sons, right? And his whole, you know, those bastards, yeah. Okay, so we kill all of them. And right, and then a couple years later, right, we build the Mikdash, right? The third ring was like maybe, it's argued what exactly, maybe it was the 67th year of the Galus, was towards the end of the first Galus. That's why Achashverosh used the Kalim of the Mikdash, because he thought the 70 years had come. He miscalculated, but whatever. The Megillah takes place at the end of the first Galus, around. And after the destruction of Amalek, then we build the second Beis HaMikdash.
But we didn't have a king at that point.
It's true, we didn't have a king at that point, but you still got to defend yourself. It's true. Okay, we did have Ezra, so I don't know if he had a Din Melech or not. I don't think so, but maybe he did. Okay, but it's true, you still got to defend yourself. But it's true. But I'm saying is every time, if you look at basically all the major incidents with Amalek, they're always closely followed by the Mishkan, than the each Beis HaMikdash, right? And in fact, you don't have, right, there are three instances of Amalek, there's three Mishkan, two Batei Mikdashim, right? And they all come in very close proximity to each other within a couple of years, right? And you're spanning thousands of years, so it's not just like it's a prerequisite halachically, but it's also historically you see that like it follows on the heels. The destruction of Amalek right afterwards is the Binyan of the Mikdash. And I want to say that's really the answer to this Rashi. Okay, I'm going to try to explain it a little bit more, but just as this first step, is that the reason why the Shekhinah told Yehoshua to not wipe out Amalek, okay, is because you need Amalek. Amalek serves a purpose, okay? And you need the battle against Amalek, the Melchamas Hashem against Amalek, because it is a prerequisite to building the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, without the war against Amalek, you don't really have the necessary prerequisite for building the Mikdash. You can't really build the Mikdash if you didn't have Amalek.
It's like a reaction to destroying them?
Can you explain that?
I'm going to try to explain that. Okay? It's weird, right? It's a strange idea. It's a strange idea. Well, it's a fair enough buy. Okay, good. Good. I like skepticism. Okay? But that's the hopefully, just at least to give you enough support. Is that the reason why God told Yeshua to leave them around is because it's before Matan Torah, the first attack of Amalek. If you wipe them all out, you're done with Amalek. Okay? So you're not going to have Amalek for later on when you need to fight against him, wipe him out in order to build the Mikdash. Okay? And also, La'asa Lavo, right? The final battle, right, when the final Mikdash is always, it's also going to be after a war against the Amalek. Okay? You can only build the third Mikdash and bring in Yemos Mashiach after you destroy Amalek. Okay, let me read your Rashi, okay? Rashi and then Ramban, and then we'll try to explain it. Okay, but first I just want to establish this fact, because it itself is this an interesting idea, and I think you can kind of, it's supported, I want to support it well enough, and then maybe you'll buy the idea. But first support the fact that you need Amalek to build the Mikdash. You need the war against Amalek. So Rashi goes like this, Ki yad al keis ka, right? That's these, again, the Rashi can learn the pasuk a little differently in the Gemara, but he's going to be Dorish it. So it says, Ki yadol kis ka, yadol shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu horma lishava b'kiso. So it says, the hand of God is raised to swear on his kisa. It's a lashon of shvuah. Lios lo mechama ve'eva b'malik, to have a war and a hatred against the malik olamas, an eternal hatred and war against the malik. God, this guy, God saying he's nishba on his kisa, that he's always going to have a, that God is going to have an eternal hatred and war against the malik forever. Umahu kase v'lo nemar kise. Why does it say kase call? It says kise, right? When you say kase, it's not normal. V'af Hashem nachal chetziyav. Also the Shem Hashem, it's, you should say yudkei vavkei. Why is it ka? Right? So the Shem Hashem is cut in half, and the kise is cut in half. Nishba kash baruch hu she'en shmo shalim v'en kiso shalim ad she'yimche shmo shel amalek kulo. Okay, God swears that his shame, his name is not complete, and his kisei is not complete until the name of Amalek is erased forever. U'kishayimcha, and when Amalek is finally wiped out, shmo yeh shalem, u'kishayimcha shmo, and when Amalek's name is wiped out, yeh shem shalem v'kisei shalem. Then God's name will be complete, and his throne will be complete. Shenemar ha'oyev tamu charvos lenatzag is a pasuk to Tehillim that the enemy, his ruins are going to be totally destroyed lenatzach forever. Zehu Amalek shekasabov everso shamo netzach. Lenatzach refers to Amalek, that God's hatred against Amalek is forever. V'arim natash to avad zechram, God uprooted Amalek's cities and he erased their memories. Ma'omar Achra, Vashem Lo'olam Yeshev, Hare Kiso Shalem. It says the Shem Hashem Lo'olam Yeshev. Koni Lemishba Kiso, Hare Kiso Shalem. So you see the Shem Shalem and the Kiso Shalem. Okay, so La'asid Lavo, when God wipes out the shame of Amalek, right, then the shame of Hashem is going to be complete, and his Kiso is going to be complete. His Malchus will be complete. But until that point, what does it mean that the Shem Hashem is incomplete? What does that mean? It means the Shem Hashem means like the man's idea of God. Our idea of God is lacking. Insofar as a Malik is around, the idea that we have of God is incomplete. There's something wrong with it. Okay? We don't have the full knowledge of God. And in Yemos Mashiach, when a Malik is totally wiped out, then the knowledge of God, right? Ki malu kol arz das Hashem kamayim liyam mechasim. Right? In the Yemos Mashiach, then the knowledge of God, will be complete. Mankind will recognize the Shem Hashem. Right? In those days, Yemos Mashiach, mankind will recognize God. And that's only going to be occurring. God's, right, that in God's Meluch will be complete. That's only going to occur after we wipe out Amalek. Okay, so the third Mikdash, and Yemos Mashiach, it follows on the heels of wiping out Amalek. Also, right? Not just the first two in the Mishkan, but the third one also. Good, one more. Okay, let's see if I find it on Bob. Okay, just because it's a strange idea. Obviously, the weird thing is you would think, better off, what do you need evil for, right? Why do you need evil in the world? It's crazy, you're leaving.
Yeah, that's success to destroy them.
Yeah, destroy them. You want to destroy all evil, right? So now you're saying you need to leave around evil so that you can destroy it later on to build the Mikdash to bring in Yemos Mashiach. But it sounds like a counterintuitive idea. Wouldn't you just be better off?
Yeah, it's the third time we go all
of them. Yeah, yes, time. Yes, exactly. The third time we're going to get them all.
Oh.
Every last one.
Right.
Yeah.
You're saying that they're like holding back or kind of, and they're not letting the Shem Hashem be complete in the world, meaning like
so long as they're around the Shem Hashem, the knowledge of God is lacking.
Right, so just,
and his malucha is lacking. His malcha, the malcha Hashem is incomplete, and the knowledge of God is incomplete.
So how so? I guess like I'm asking as a basic definition, who's a malik such that this would be the case?
Who is a, oh, you mean like now?
I forget about now. I don't know. I'm just saying like, who is a malik such that the Shem Hashem would be lacking? One, since they're around.
What's your question exactly? That what?
He's saying that since Amalek, it's obviously their existence is a deficiency in Malchus Hashem.
Correct.
He's trying to understand who they are, that it causes or that it imposes upon, you know, and detracts from that Malchus.
Okay, good question. Okay, the whole idea, what's the idea? I haven't really explained the idea.
Oh, you're going to take that up.
I'm going to try to explain that, yes. I'm going to try to explain that.
So.
Okay? Okay, fine. Now, that's a short Ramban. Okay, so it's like this. He says, "Kil machamam in a mishpacha azos." The war against that family. Amalek is a descendant of Esav, right? We know that.
Yes.
From the Pelegesh Timnah, right? She's from Timnah.
Okay.
Eliphaz, Pelegesh of Timnah was the Pelegesh of Eliphaz. That's that pasuk, right? So that's Amalek. Okay. He's a. Okay, good. So he's a descendant of Esav. So he, Ki Mochamim Meshbach Azos, he harishona v'achron l'Yisrael. It is the first war that we fought after we came out of Mitzrayim, and it is the last war that we're going to fight. Ki Amalek Mizar Esav, Mimenu Ba'aleinu Mochama Bereshis Agayim. And from Esav, Amalek, was the first war we fought, the first of all the nations. Mimizar Shal Esav Hayulanu Hagalos V'achorban Achron. And from the offspring of Esav is the final destruction of the Mikdash. This is the second Mikdash and the final Galus, okay, which we're in right now, right? The destruction of the second Mikdash and the final Galus that we're in right now, that comes from Esav. Kashiyom Ravasinu Shenachno Yom Begalus Edom. Right? Chazal say that we're in the Galus of Edom nowadays. Vakashi Yenutzach, and when we're victorious over Esav, Vayachlosh Huva Amim Rabim Asher Ito, and we weaken the nations, many nations that are with him. Right, there's him, Amalek, and Amo, the nations that surround themselves, attach themselves to Amalek. Right, he corrupts not just, you know, like the Nazis did, not just the Nazis, but they end up taking over the other nations that cling to them and take over their ideology. Mimenu nosha l'olam. So from that victory that we have over Amalek, that will be an eternal salvation. Right, that will be the Yeshua Olamis. The Kasher Amu Amar v'alu Moshiim b'Harzia unlishbat ashar Esav. V'haisa l'Hashem hamlucha. Okay, so that's the pasuk, the last pasuk in Amos, right? It's Olu Moshim Ha'atzil and Shpodes Har Esav. Right? Always, what's that pasuk talking about? That's the final war against Amalek. Okay, Esav is Amalek over there. V'haisa l'Hashem hamlucha. And then, l'Hashem as Mashiach, the Machas Hashem will be complete. V'nei kol asher asu Moshe v'Yeshua imahem berishona yasu l'Yahu v'Mashiach ben Yosef imzaram. Alken yis'amitz Moshe v'davar. Okay, and this is, you know, the Ramban's Ma'is Avosim Labanim. Not going to get into that. He's going to say there's a parallel between what Moshe and Yeshua did and what's going to be Eliyahu and Mashiach ben Yosef. Lost love against the war against the Malik. Okay? But again, the point is that Yemos and Mashiach and the third Mikdash is only going to be around after the final war against these bastards. Okay?
I have a question now.
Yeah.
I just have one question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Say, everybody talks about Mashiach ben Yosef for the war against Amalek, right?
Yeah.
I thought all the tribes of Yehuda were destroyed.
Oh, you know, it's a question for another time. That goes with his question of why aren't there records of all these things for a different time? Probably never, but a different time. Okay, fine.
Time to not be recorded.
Okay. Okay, fine. So the font, so basically, this is what I want to say. Okay, the question is, why do you need evil in order to, why do you need this Muhammad against Amalek, okay, in order to bring about Yemos Mashiach and to build a Mikdash? Why is that so necessary?
Excellent question.
Okay, fine. So one more Gemara is a Chumash here, right? One more Gemara. It says like this. It's a famous Gemara in Sanhedrin, where Chazal were mispal to remove the Avodah Zarah, the taiva for Avodah Zarah. Okay? So it says like this. Vayizaku b'kol gadol el Hashem elokecham. Right? They cried out, Zan Sheknes Agdol, they cried out in a loud voice to God. My Amar, what they say? Amar Yehuda v'itim Rav Yonasan. Baya, baya. Woe is us, right? The Ayve. Hainu de'acharve lebesa. The Kalya Lehechala, this Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah, it destroyed our Mikdash and it burnt down like the Hechal. The Katlinu Letzadike, and it killed how many righteous people died because of Avodah Zarah, the sin of Avodah Zarah. Viglinu Yisrael Merai, it would cause Klai Yisrael to be exiled from their land. Vedainu Merakid Beinon, right? And it's still dancing amongst us. They still have this taiva for Avodah Zarah and they can't get rid of it, right? Klum yahavisa lan el kabule be agra. Did you give, talking to God now, is there any reason you gave us this Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah except to receive reward? Okay, Rashi. Lachov es yitzreinu lekabas charakach, to overcome our instincts, our Yetzahara, and to receive reward for it. Lo ihu be'inon, velo agri be'inon. Okay, we don't want it, and we don't want the reward. Rashi. Okay, good. Right? So, what are they saying? Right? And they were spalled that God removed the Avodah Zarah, right? The incident to the Yetzer Avodah Zarah, and he did to a certain extent. Okay? What are they talking about? That the God made the entire Yetzer Hara in order for us to receive reward. We don't want the Yetzer Hara, we don't want the reward. Right? They couldn't overcome it, right? They couldn't overcome it. Is it, there's a, I think that this is the basic principle, okay, that I'm going to try to use to answer this question, is that the Yetzer Hara is given to us in order for us to receive reward from overcoming it. Okay. Why do we need this Yetzer Hara? It's like this. Is that basically what happens is that a person has certain parts of his personality that are, right, Yetzer Hara, we'll say, it refers to certain instincts, right, physical instincts, psychological drives, things like that. And it's very hard for a person, it's impossible, truthfully, for a person to just overcome those, I think. I shouldn't say impossible. Just to get rid of those, to remove those parts of your personality just by just deciding to, okay? The way that you change your personality, the way that you, you know, perfect yourself, that you make yourself a better person, come closer to God, how do you do that? Is what happens is that you get into situations of conflict. You get into a situation where you have a conflict between your desire, right? The desire, like in this their case of Avodah Zarah, it goes into arayos, right? You're a girl, or you have even achila, food. There's a certain situations where which bring about your desire, and like those parts of your personality become activated, right? They become activated. Your desire becomes aroused, and now you have a conflict. Is, you know, your Yetzer Hara is telling you one thing, and then you have your mind is telling you something else, and you have to choose. Okay, it's when you have those situations of conflict, that's when you have the ability to really choose to reject the Yetzer Hara and to overcome it and to remove those aspects of your personality. It's in the battle, it's in the Melchemes Hachayim, okay, the internal war that you fight against the Yetzer Hara, it's when those situations come up that you have that conflict and you have the battle that you can choose to basically, you know, get rid of the Yetzer Hara and to uproot it from your personality. You can recognize it for what it is, see the evil that's a part of you and the, right, the evil inclination, and you could kill it, so to speak. You can uproot it in that conflict. Okay, but if you don't have the conflict, where let's say it's repressed, ultimately that's what happens in this story. Right? The desire, the taiva for the desire becomes repressed, the instinct becomes repressed. And you can't, it doesn't really come to a conscious decision. Okay, so then you can't really get rid of it. Okay, if it's a repressed desire and it never really becomes a conscious conflict where you have to choose, it's impossible to ever really uproot that element from your personality. It basically stays there. It stays as part of your personality and it affects you. And ultimately, you have a lower, you have lesser schar. You have lesser ability to raise yourself to a higher level of perfection, a higher knowledge of God, right? And you have to, your energy becomes trapped in the instincts. Because it's basically the instinct is repressed. It's part of who you are. But you're unable to really remove that evil part of your personality because it never expresses itself in an open conflict, in which case you could do battle against it and really destroy it and really remove it from your personality. Okay? Now they said, what they're saying over here is that, look, we'll keep it. Basically, we can't. We just, you know, we have this desire. It becomes conscious, and we have this taiva. And you see, over and over, we sin. We don't choose right. We keep serving Avodah Zarah. We keep falling prey, and the Mikdash is destroyed, and the, you know, and tzaddikim get killed, and Klal Yisrael goes into galus, and like it's going to keep happening over and over. And like, look, why are you doing? Why did God let this desire become conscious and become able to express itself so that we could overcome it and gain perfection? Better. Let's have it repressed. Repress the whole thing. Let it be repressed. And whatever, we're not going to be able to perfect ourselves, but we're not going to sin. Okay? And that's what they were mispalel, and they were answered. Okay? They did the same thing with Arias, and it didn't work out as well. Okay? Okay, so that's... Does that make sense? That idea of basically of why the Yetzer Hara, right? There's a schar from overcoming the Yetzer Hara, but you need that conflict in order to really... Okay, good. I want to say the same thing that exists in the internal war that a person wages. In a person's individual life, there's a growth, there's maturity, and a person perfects himself, he gains knowledge of God, and he changes his personality, his midos, and like the way he views the world, and that's through, you know, Yetzer Lev Adam Ra Minua, a person starts off all Yetzer Hara, and as he grows up, he basically perfects himself, right? So that exists not just for each individual life, but that exists for society as a whole. As you see, mankind, right, the nations of the world, Klal Yisrael, every society goes through it, but the world as a whole, it matures. It goes through stages, okay? And the world becomes more perfected, and it comes hopefully closer to the ideas of God. Oh, it's not really a linear path, but whatever. And ultimately, we hold in Yemos HaMashiach, then all the nations of the world will come down in Chag HaSukkos, they'll come into the Mikdash, the Makrav Karbanos, they'll bow down to the Melech HaMashiach, and can you write, you know, ki moluch olar dat de'as Hashem, right? The whole world will be filled with the knowledge of God, and that the, you know, the umus olam, the world as a whole, mankind as a whole, is striving for a certain measure of perfection that will be reached in Yemos HaMashiach, right? When the whole world will, as we say in Rosh Hashanah, they'll accept v'kablu chulam es ol machusecha, right? That everybody will accept, you know, one God over them as the ultimate power, as the ultimate ruler. Right, and that's the right last aguda achas, one society to recognize one king, one God, and the and that really that vision of the end of days is I want to say it's accomplished by when mankind defeats evil. Okay, when these tendencies that exist not just on an individual plane but on a social plane. That, to answer your question from before, for his question was, but I say a malik, the evil of a malik is in mankind as a whole. Okay, and that's how it crops up. It crops up, and you see Nazis, it cropped up. You see, it's mankind as a whole has a certain evil streak. It's a certain hatred of God that's part of mankind's psyche. Okay, and that drives a malik, the insane hatred of a malik for God and for Jews. And that's part of mankind. And I don't think the Klal Yisrael is totally removed from it either. Okay, so it's there. But it doesn't. It's preventing this hate. This amalek streak in mankind prevents mankind as a whole from being able to recognize the Malchus Hashem and the Shem Hashem, and it inhibits the development of society as a whole. Okay, this streak in society in mankind as a whole. Okay, and it's only when you have a particular nation which expresses it, like the Nazis did. Right, which they become. It's like it becomes like in like they personify. It doesn't become like Nazis. It's not just an amalek streak. They were amalek. They become the entire personification of that evil, of that hatred. It's not just a part of their personality, but certain nations focus on certain aspects. Is that you have that it becomes externalized. It becomes objectified to the world of what that evil really is, and the world can fight a war against that. You know, and you can fight a war, and Klal Yisrael can fight a war, and you can choose to say that is evil, we reject that. And what the world ultimately did by the Nazis, right, the Nuremberg trials, where they recognized that this is evil, there it's a sick, demented way of going, right? I mean, half the world really believed in this crazy, the Nazis stuff. It's unbelievable how many, you know, what were normal people 15, you know, 20 years beforehand really believed in the whole, right, Nazi stuff, but the rest of the world did not. They judge them, they realize there's war crimes, and through that battle, you know, that will ultimately be waged, that battle is the climactic war that enables mankind to fight against evil, right, that the externalized evil in the world, and enables mankind to really remove that aspect from the person, from the society, from that personality. Okay, it's only through these battles, Melchemos Hashem, that you fight against evil, those are the situations that enable mankind to advance and to perfect itself, the battle against evil. If you don't have a malik, if you just always lays repressed, if it doesn't ever express itself in a particular nation, so then you can't really attack it. There's no way to really remove it from mankind. And therefore, the Shekhinah told Yeshua, don't wipe them out. Leave them around. You need them. Because you're going to fight a battle, and that was what Shaul really tried to do, is supposed to have done, is you need to really fight a battle against them, and that is going to be the springboard. That battle is going to take Klal Yisrael to a new level of perfection, which will enable them to build the Mikdash and have Hashrash Shechina. And lots of love, you know, Alu Moshe Maharet Zion Shpodes Har Esav. And that's really going to be the springboard, Lasa Lavo, the final battle, to enable us to really, you know, advance and change society, perfect society, the battle against evil. Therefore, the Shekhinah said, leave him around. The time wasn't right. Before Matan Torah was not the time for that battle. Okay, so the Shekhinah said, Yeshua, leave him around, and the time to wipe them out is going to come after Matan Torah. Yeah, go ahead.
But if we're saying that it's an ideology that exists in people, then Yeshua not wiping them out really isn't really going to do much, though.
Right. I mean, who really cares? Just wipe out the particular genetic Amalek?
Yeah, isn't it not a genetic thing?
No. Yeah, I don't know. It's very confusing here. There's like two types of Amalek. There's like the genetic Amalek, and then there's like the ideology of Amalek. It's like there are these two things.
The ideology originated from the genetic, but you do need someone who's.
I don't know. What it seems to be, the way I'm interpreting it, it's a good question. The way I'm interpreting it is that if he had wiped them all out, that would have actually totally exterminated. When you really totally wipe out a nation, that has an impact. Okay, that changes things. Okay, the total eradication. And by him not totally eradicating Amalek at that time, it like didn't complete the war. But it would have had a different impact if he had totally eradicated on the world. If they had found out that Amalek, that Yeshua had totally destroyed Amalek. That would have meant something. But the fact that he didn't finish the battle, Amalek was resilient, they survived, that prevented it from really having the same impact. It's not the same when you kill you didn't get every Nazi. We didn't do that. You know what I mean? You got some of them, but you didn't get every last Nazi. We were still hunting them down a little bit. But it wasn't like a total extermination. Purim, really, we got everybody. That's why in Shushan, they were really, you know, they wanted the extra day to go after the extra people in Shushan to really wipe out every single one. It's a different thing when you get every last guy. So I'm saying if they had really done that to the original Amalek, they really would have...
So why can they...
Well,
why tells them that Pesach to destroy the Amalek?
Because I'm saying there's like a sequence of events. You need the Torah to be given. This is before Matan Torah. Okay. So once the Torah is given, that's like the very Pesach is Vayomer Shem Moshe Ksov Zo Zikaron BaSefer B'Sim Bazne Yeshua Kimacho Emcha Zecher Amal V'Tachas HaShemayim. It's like the Ramban says, the Sefer is the Sefer Torah. Okay,
right.
So it's that you need that. There's an order of events. Okay, in order for to have your Moshe Mashiach. Okay, and first you needed the Torah. You need the Torah to be given. And then you can have your Moshe Mashiach. Then you could have wiping out Amalek and building the Mikdash. But you can't build the Mikdash before you have the Torah. So it is basically keep them around, V'yachash Yeshua, keep them around, write this down in the Sefer Torah. Once you have the Torah, then wipe out Amalek.
Before the other two Mikdashes,
right.
they also just knew not to kill everybody?
Well, no, once you have the Torah, then the idea is to wipe them out totally.
So but, they just were able to that?
Well, I think if Shaul had done that, it would have been a totally different history of the Jewish people. You wouldn't have had David. You wouldn't have had the whole Malchus David, Melch Mashiach of Ben David. It's a totally, the whole fate of the Jewish people changed by Shaul not fulfilling that tzivoy. And that's why the God says, Nichamti Kiasisi Melch. He regrets it. When God says he regrets something, it implies, obviously, God doesn't, right? He knows, it doesn't really. But when they use the expression of Necham, when God regrets something, it means it's like a qualitative shift in the destiny of mankind, of Klal Yisrael, like by the Mabel. Right? He says he's Nichamti, he made man, Al Adama, wiped out the entire world, starts a whole new trajectory of mankind from Noach. So over here, the whole destiny of the Jewish people would have changed. Would have been Moshe Mashiach. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe that really would have been. You know, Shaul's going to wipe out Amalek, build the Mikdash, and that's going to be the end of it. And it's going to be Shaul forever and all his kids, and that's what it would have been. But, I mean, he didn't, and it was a total change and shift in the destiny of the Jewish people. Tal us and now you have David and Mashiach ben David, and it was a failure. Really, Shaul's failure was a radical breach of the whole path of the Jewish people. Took us in a totally different destiny. So if he had done that originally, yeah. Now, if they had done it in Mordechai and Esther, I don't know. If it didn't seem like that was a possibility for them. Nobody.
They
have a mouth, right? Exactly. It wasn't exactly the same thing. That really doesn't. Yeah.
Well, what kind of impact? Let's say Shaul did kill everyone. How would it have affected everyone? What impact?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm really.
You know what I'm saying, like when you said before that when you have a milchama against Amalek and then you wipe them out, like it has.
Oh yeah.
The world.
I guess like there's a certain thing of like I mean, just the simplest thing is that, like, when Klal Yisrael is successful, it creates Kiddush Hashem. And when Klal Yisrael is, like, in Galus, it creates a Chil Hashem. Right? It looks like the, like, it's like, you know, we're identified with God, right, as God's people. And, like, when we're unsuccessful, success really is what people look at to judge a system, you know? So when a Malek is totally wiped out and exterminated, it just shows you where that what the ultimate end of that evil is, total destruction. That has an impact on people recognizing that where evil goes, what it gets you, what is the hatred of a God. The hatred of God ultimately leads a person to total desolation. Look what happened to Malek. They're totally wiped off the face of the earth. But insofar as they're partly successful and they gain success and they rise, then people are attracted to that. So that's like the easiest way to kind of make sense in those categories. Okay, any questions?
Okay,
fine.
The square.